Okay, so this research actually comes out of the Tobacco Control Research Group at the University of Miami, which I worked with previous years. I was the third choice to do this presentation, so bear with me if I fumble a little bit. Just as a disclaimer also, this work was funded by the Flight Institute, Flight Attendant Medical Research Institute, awarded specifically to Dr. David Lee, and there are no other disclaimers. Just to give a little bit introduction in terms of the study rationale, about 80% of the U.S. population is currently covered by comprehensive clean indoor air legislation. However, in the state of Florida, we only have partial clean indoor air legislation, and we still have found evidence that a majority of young adults report secondhand smoke exposure, specifically in bars, motor vehicles, workplace, and other areas. In addition, we know that exposure to secondhand smoke also is significantly associated with respiratory symptomatology, and also evidence from nationally representative data, specifically the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, also indicated that continuing exposure to secondhand smoke in the United States adult population still exists. So the rationale for this study specifically was to look at Florida populations. And we collaborated with people from the Florida Department of Health who worked on the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, in which we conducted a follow-back survey of participants from the 2010, 11, and 12 surveys in order to first characterize biologically confirmed and self-reported secondhand smoke exposure, in addition to testing the association between exposure and respiratory symptoms. The focus of this particular presentation is the second objective, in which we specifically look at exposure variables in relation to respiratory symptoms. So in order to be included in our study, participants of the BRFSS at the end of the study were asked if they would like to be included in a follow-back survey, not specifically our study, but for another study actually that was looking at asthma. Any participants who agreed to be recontacted were provided, we were provided a list by the BRFSS coordinator every month of those eligible participants. In addition, anybody who identified as a non-smoker was above the years, above 18 years of age, spoke English or Spanish, and ultimately after contact provided verbal and returned written consent, and I'll explain the procedures in a second. So data collection occurred all through the phone, and the BRFSS itself is also conducted through random digit dialing, so we were provided a list of people's telephone numbers who agreed to be recontacted. What we did is collected biological specimens, in which we directed participants to cut a certain strand of hair of a certain length from their head, and also to provide a saliva sample. And I'll show the collection kit in a second. In addition, while providing directions on how to do that, we also conducted a comprehensive questionnaire over the phone where we pulled a number of items from existing surveys that have been validated to look at smoking history, childhood exposure, recent secondhand smoke exposure, and this includes multiple areas, bars, clubs, as mentioned before, in addition to attitude towards smoking, and ultimately we also asked about respiratory symptoms and conditions, including asthma, sneezing, wheezing, and so on. All of the data were collected through SurveyMonkey, in which we stored all the data, and we conducted the biological specimen collection over the phone, which was somewhat of a challenge. So we asked participants to cut strands of hair, about 30 to 50. Again, the goal of this was really to assess for long-term exposure of secondhand smoke, where we could look at nicotine levels. In addition, we asked for saliva samples, in which we marked that little vial that's right there with 5 milliliters, and we had very comprehensive directions in terms of how to conduct this. Try to make sure participants did this over the phone while we were on the phone with them. Again, that was hard to monitor, but again, we hope that they did actually conduct this. In addition, we provided a return envelope where they would provide these specimens in addition to a written consent form to make sure that they did consent to participate and that we are able to analyze their biological and self-reported data. So this is a chart detailing our recruitment. As you can see, we actually called about 2,700 participants. Ultimately, to be included in our analyses, participants had to have answered our questions, provided written consent, and had sufficient samples, both hair and saliva. So some of the challenge was some participants only provided one sample or insufficient sample, meaning they didn't provide sufficient saliva, they didn't provide the right amount of hair. So ultimately our sample for this analysis consisted of 286 participants. So what we did is first, we wanted to look at our respiratory symptoms. We had a battery of questions that came from a various collection of surveys. So what we wanted to do was take an exploratory approach in terms of empirically identifying discrete groupings of respiratory symptoms. So we took an exploratory factor analysis approach, specifically using principal component analysis with uncorrelated factors, meaning orthogonal rotation. After finding the factors that emerged from those analyses, we tried to model those using general linear models of secondhand smoke exposure indicators. And the secondhand smoke exposure indicators were all dichotomized. There were self-reported indicators. We looked at specific places in addition to having a composite index in which it was exposure at any of those places. Saliva cotinine levels were also used, which estimates roughly 3 to 5 day previous exposure. And the cutoff was 0.05 milligrams. And for hair nicotine level, which estimates roughly about 3 month exposure, we used a cutoff of 0.005. Now, this is just an overview of descriptors for our study population. As you can see, about 26% of our population through saliva cotinine levels were shown to be exposed to secondhand smoke, and 60% of those through hair nicotine, which would make sense for longer term exposure. And in terms of the self-reported exposure variables, 6% reported at home, the largest being at work and outside the door of a building, and then on our composite, 65% in total self-reported some sort of exposure to secondhand smoke. Our study population was largely comprised of females, overwhelmingly 65% versus 35. It was also an older population, which somewhat matches the actual Florida population. And in addition, you can see that it was highly educated and largely white, and employment, mostly employed, and mostly not Hispanic. Now, results from the CRISP principal component analysis, we looked at the factor loadings, and we found that there were three discrete groupings that came about based on the size of the factors. As you can see, we ended up having three factors. One, chest-related symptoms, so you can see that includes wheezing, shortness of breath, being awakened at night. Then we found a second factor that we lovely called phlegm, which has to do with coughing up phlegm. And the third factor had to do with nasal symptoms, which is blowing your nose, having a dry throat. And we used these as the outcome measures to model the general linear models. Now, in terms of modeling chest severity, so a lower score indicates more severe symptoms as opposed to higher. So in the univariate models, you can see each of these were modeled separately in simple linear regressions. When you look to the right, you see the multivariable results, which are somewhat counterintuitive. As you can see, the directionality varies by the exposure, which was unexpected. And currently, we're still in the midst of trying to elucidate what the issues are here. But as you can see, being exposed in someone else's car has one of the larger effects, including being exposed in another public indoor place. Also being Hispanic, apparently, compared to being not Hispanic. When looking at the results for phlegm, and again, these are only significant results that are being shown, other associations that were not significant are not shown here. In the model looking at phlegm symptomatology, all the associations are positive, significant for being exposed in someone else's car, having an income less than $25,000, and also being white. The final results for the nasal symptoms, as you can see, being exposed in someone else's car also had a significant association. However, the directionality was the reverse of what was seen in the previous analyses. In addition, income less than $25,000 and also $25,000 to $75,000. So again, these are very preliminary results that were somewhat counterintuitive, which makes us dubious in terms of our assessments and whether or not responses were adequate. So some of the limitations, again, just to reiterate, trying to collect data, especially biological data, over the phone may be a major limitation. There's no way of us knowing for sure that the actual saliva and hair are from the individual who we interviewed. Secondly, we had quite a low response rate. As you can see, we contacted quite a number of individuals and ultimately ended up with 286, a sufficient enough sample. And we also found that there was a low concordance between secondhand exposure indicators. In previous analyses, we looked to see how well associated the saliva, hair, nicotine, and also the self-reported measures associated with each other. And the correlations were not as high as we thought. They were roughly around 0.5. So again, this may be an issue in terms of our data collection. However, there are a number of strengths that are worth mentioning. For example, we did use a follow-back survey of a representative state-based population survey, the BRFSS. We were able to conduct a comprehensive battery of questions related to secondhand smoke exposure, in addition to actually collecting biological data, which allowed us to look to see what the associations were between those indicators. And finally, our comprehensive battery also include secondhand smoke exposure variables by multiple locations, in addition to multiple respiratory symptoms. So conclusions here, clearly there are some inconsistencies in the associations that we found between the various secondhand smoke exposure measures and our respiratory symptoms, which is leading us to revisit our data and try to understand really what the issue was. And what we did find is that exposure in someone else's car is significantly associated with all three of the respiratory factors that we found. Again, the directionality was counterintuitive and it merits further exploration. That concludes the presentation. Any questions?